south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, you know, people are always asking me about Chile. Of course, people who've never been there before call it Chile. But once you land there and you find everybody looks at you funny or corrects you, you get to hang a Chile right away. Of course, one of the reasons expats are so interested in Chile is because it's probably the most first world style country in all of Latin America. It's calm, it's peaceful. Well, it was up until about a year or so ago. However, it is pretty much first world expensive. And as with every country in South America, the products we use and buy and the name brands we're used to seeing are often unavailable. And if they are, they're really expensive. Because of one, a gluttonous, malignant government. And two, because of logistics. Same reason why if you take a flight to Central America or the Caribbean, you could pay $300 to $500 maybe. And when you go to South America, you're looking at double that. So today, anyway, we'll start off with talking about why I'd never want to live permanently in Chile, though it's a good place to visit. Of course, you longtime listeners know I never recommended Chile as an outstanding Plan B exit strategy. Though, as with all Latin American countries, even places like Cuba and Venezuela are options. If you got the dough, you can make it work and like it. But as for Chile, let's talk about some very bad recent developments that most gringos and expats who haven't been there before and look upon Chile as some kind of glowing example of a Latin American country that's doing things mostly right. Well, today you'll find out if you've believed that all along, you've been had. Let's start with this very recent email from Mr. A. He says, about Chile, which I know you don't recommend anyway, here's what's happening on the ground there. And it ain't good. They just imposed a third nationwide lockdown. Seems like Chile, apart from most other Latin American countries, takes enforcement of the law quite seriously, so you better stick to the rules or you'll end up with a fine or in the slammer. He says, my friend, a lady expat, says they're only allowed to go outside for 4 hours a week. That's all you get to get any kind of groceries or important things you might need. But you have to go by yourself, too. You can't bring your husband, wife, partner, etc. It goes without saying, if you're living up in the United States and you hate this new world we're living in, well, it's happening in the worst way in Chile, too. Worse yet, Chile has gone full communist retard, too. Right before all the lockdowns, they had massive riots and looting. Think BLM and Antifa, Santiago, Chile style. They also changed and amended the constitution to hammer in their communistic agenda. The old Chile is gone. Then he says, I wanted to seriously move there about 2 years ago. These latest developments certainly popped my bubble. Then comes this email from Sal, who's been living in Chile for quite a while. He says, here in Chile, we have our own minor league version of Anthony Fauci. His name is Enrique Perez, and he directs the Ministerio de Salud de Chile, a cabinet-level office in the Chilean government. What he says goes, and he's in charge of all the lockdowns. Then Sal says, here in Chile, one of the world's most aggressive mass vaccination campaigns began shortly after the start of this year. As of May 1st, 2021, he says, around 13 million Chileans have gotten the jab, with somewhere around 140,000 people being jabbed a day. The most interesting fact about that now is Chile is seeing an explosion of new COVID cases. We're talking from 6 to 8,000 people a day, between 100 and 150 deaths per day too, attributed to COVID. And of course, everything is attributed to COVID. Even if your dog gets run down by a car. If the driver tests positive, it's a COVID-related death. Think about it. Technically, it is. So the COVID cases are actually rising in a country that's considered one of the most vaccinated on Earth. With the most stringent of lockdowns beginning on April 1st, that's made international travel, which was hardly easy before then, a nightmare now, even for citizens and foreign residents. If you're not in either group and insane enough to want to come here to Chile, forget it. You're not getting in. Any citizens or residents coming in are forcibly quarantined for 5 days in a hotel at their expense. Even if you've got a negative, notoriously unreliable PCR hockey stick up the nose test. Me, Johnny here, yeah. Can tell he's from Canada, because who else would use hockey analogies? Anyway, Sal goes on, and you better believe the curfews here are enforced with threats of jail time and huge fines. So for the last year, curfews have become permanent. Now, I know, Johnny, there's lots of hearsay going around, plenty of rumors, and people don't have the facts. But here are the facts from a guy living in Chile. Here's exactly what you have to go through if you want to go anywhere out of your house. Number one, you have to obtain permission from a carabinero. That's a police officer. You do that by going to the police department website. You have to print, fill out the form, and save it in your phone. It lists your name, your Chilean ID number, and foreigners with permanent residency must use their passport number. You have to put down your age, address, and destination. You're allowed up to 2 excursions out of your house per week. Up until recently, you were allowed 3 hours out of your house per permiso slip, which means you had 6 hours of free movement per week to get groceries, do your banking, go to government offices, etc., etc. And they'd only authorize your permiso slip if your reason was to visit one of the essential places open for business. Say you grabbed your pooper scooper and you wanted to take your dog for a walk in the park. Wait a minute. Well, I guess you can't do that because your dog died a COVID-related death, remember? All right, then let's suppose you want to go fishing or visit your sick old grandma in the nursing home. Well, forget about it. That stuff's non-essential. Oh, and you have to know, thanks to the rules and the usual Latin American mañana time, you could easily spend the bulk of those 6 hours a week, your free time, so to speak, standing in lines, constantly violating the so-called social distancing standards. Come on. How many people really stand the required 6 feet away from each other? Oh, and when you're out and about in Chile, the security COVID police are out in front of the entrances to all the so-called essential services, where they dutifully inspect your permiso slip. They then point that stupid temperature device at you, and people just buy right into it, Latinos and gringos alike. Talk about George Orwell. I was at a mall the other day, and there's an enforcer at every elevator door, where the sign says in big letters, 3 persons only, solo 3 personas. Heaven forbid you try to stuff 4 people in an elevator that the manufacturer Otis says right on a stainless steel plaque inside that elevator. Maximum load, 13 people. Maximum weight, 900 kilograms. That's around 2,000 pounds. By the way, that'd be 13 Latinos or 6 Americans. Ain't it the truth? All right, then our emailer says, welcome to Chile, where checkpoints have now been established at all toll booths on private highways. And when you pull up to pay that toll, the carabineros, the cops, will stick out a hand and say, your papers, please. Papeles, por favor. I've been in those lines, and traffic backup is like a scene from the zombie apocalypse. The thing is, Johnny, many first world people that don't live in Chile, I'm talking about Americans and Canadians, they praise the Chilean system, being that it's a Latin American country that's dug itself out of extreme poverty and is heading towards first world status. That's the rumor anyway. And people up north hear and read about the fact that because the Chilean government has privatized a lot of services, including their social security system, therefore capitalism has given them a shot in the arm. Problem is, the private companies that Chilean government farmed out their services to were handpicked by corrupt Chilean bureaucratic insiders. You know the story, crony capitalism loaded with nepotism, etc., etc. And because the system's crumbling now, all that gives privatization a bad name. But it's really not true privatization. Not when your brother-in-law's company gets the electrical power distribution contract. So don't be fooled when you hear about the so-called success of Chile and the word privatization in the same breath. For example, one of the reasons for the great unrest of 2019, where there were riots in the streets, the worst in Chile's history since the now despised dictator Pinochet's era. One of the number one reasons people took to the streets is to protest Chile's privatized retirement pension system. Though, as mentioned, if you really peel back the layers, you'll see it's not private at all, just crony capitalism, with everyone taking their cut along the way. Then our emailer says, as an expat English teacher and English tutor, one of my students in 2019 walked me through a pension calculation for the average Chilean. With the numbers crunched, I was surprised to find out you had to be retired 40 years before you got all the money back you paid into the system. Nobody lives that long. So the government and its private partners simply skim off the rest of that money. In reality, a privatized Social Security system will definitely work, and it'll definitely put out a lot more money than anything the government could put together. But only if it's completely independent of government and selected without cronyism or bias. And that'll never happen. The other thing that makes Chile such a bad bet for a plan B is that there's absolutely no alternative media here. And though the internet is everywhere, just like in the U.S., nearly all alternative media is in English. And it's been estimated that no more than 5% of Chileans can read English well enough to understand it. And only about 1% of Chileans are motivated enough or curious enough to actually seek out alternative opinion. But when there is a riot and people start taking to the streets, Chileans love a demonstration. And just like everywhere, people look at the news on television and the internet. And the most popular news outlet, by far, here in Chile, the Spanish edition of CNN. Now, if that's not enough to make you want to redirect your plan B to a place other than Chile, here's something that'll put you over the edge. According to the latest political poll numbers out on May 24th, the person leading in the opinion poll for our next president, with elections slated for November, is Communist Party candidate Daniel Jadue. And just to show you how the world views that, Chile has the highest credit rating in all of Latin America. But now, with a communist candidate in the lead, investors are very skittish. Oh, by the way, Venezuelan dictator Nicolas Maduro was the first to celebrate the most recent communist candidate poll numbers in Chile. Question is, will Chile hit the skids like Cuba and Venezuela? Oh, and by the way, Monday, the first business day after the news of that poll, Chile's stock market fell 10% on the news, which is a sign of things to come and how the business community feels about having a commie in charge. Now, we're not talking about creeping socialism here. We're talking about actual communism. Oh, and just to complete the picture, you know, if you work legally on the books in Chile, your monthly Social Security contribution is 10% of your income, which, as mentioned, takes 40 years to recover, and we're not even counting in inflation there. So, hypothetically, if, for example, you retire at 60 and manage to live to be 100, only then would you break even. That is in a perfect world, because we have inflation in our world. And in the last 40 years, the Chilean peso has lost 90% of its value. So today in Chile, you'd have to live to be over 200 to get the money back that you put into the system. So naturally, people are pissed off about that. And, well, it's the same kind of thing with the U.S. Social Security system, too. Nobody ever talks about how much the average American contributes in his lifetime and how long it takes him to get that back when he finally retires. You can search those numbers, all right, but they never factor in the almost 400% inflation that's happened in the last 40 years. Oh, and another reason it's no fun living in Chile is that they've got that VAT, you know, that's the value-added tax called IVA in Latin America. The IVA, or national sales tax, in Chile is 19%. Now, in Guatemala and many other Latin American countries, the IVA is only 12%. So in Chile and elsewhere in Latin America, you pay the IVA on everything you buy. And it's even worse if you're vacationing, traveling, or touring. That means when you get your restaurant bill, there'll be 19% VAT added to the bill, plus 10 to 15% automatically added as a tip, called propina in Spanish. Plus, in some resort towns, there'll be an added tourism tax on top of all that. That means the price of a meal or a nice time out with your friends will cost 35 to 50% more than the rack rate for your hotel or price on the menu. And it's all due to those pustulent government parasites. And if that isn't bad enough, there's a whole category in the Chilean tax code for taxation of what they call luxury items. They get taxed with the 19% VAT plus 15% on top of that. And with some products, the luxury tax is 50%, not 15%. 50%. Plus, there's a soda and beverage tax on top of that 19% VAT of 20.5%. And when it comes to beverages with high sugar content, there's a 31.5% tax added to the VAT, which is why a can of Coca-Cola might cost you $2 in Chile. Though for Coca-Cola lovers, it's a slow death by poison, so maybe that's not such a bad thing. Of course, intended as a deterrent, but the government will get the dough and just piss it away. Of course, when it comes to alcoholic beverages, all countries clean up. In Chile, you pay 19% VAT plus 20 to 31% additionally, depending what kind of booze or booze preparation it is. So if you're wondering why basic items in South America can cost twice or even more than what you pay in Central America and up in the States, now you know why. So consider that if your plan B was to move on down to South America, specifically Chile. Though again, like I always say, if you got tons of dough, you can move anywhere and create a nice little island of tranquility for yourself. But not many people are in that position, that's for sure. Then comes this email from Lex. She says, Johnny, I don't get it. It's either super ironic or just completely hypocritical, but how can there be such rampant corruption in Latin America? Bribes, mordidas, a culture of getting over on the government and tax evasion, which I thoroughly applaud, by the way. But being that Latinos are so very religious, and me, being a pure tall, white, blonde gringo from New York who's had a few Latina girlfriends. I've seen the religious shrines in their houses firsthand. And I always wonder, how can such a very religious society have such broken down morals and ethics? I spent a lot of time in Latino neighborhoods. It's obvious immigrants bring their cultures with them. Look at New York. Every ethnic group has a little section. The Polish section, Italian, Irish, Slovak section, Chinatown, Puerto Rican town, Jamaican and Dominican neighborhoods. And those enclaves are just saturated with social and moral problems. Not to mention criminal elements and gangs. You got Puerto Rican gangs, Cuban gangs, Dominican gangs, Jamaican gangs. Every ethnic neighborhood has its criminal activities. Yet their houses seem filled with religion. All the mothers, grandmas, and old ladies are churchgoers, though it seems no one under 50 has the fear of God in them. I just don't get it. Maybe I never will. Maybe I'm not supposed to. Signed, White Boy Lex. All right, WBL, let's try to tackle that. If you don't think every gringo and expat that lands here in Latin America doesn't have those same thoughts and see the same double standards, how can we not see it? Religion is in your face down here. And except for Cuba and Venezuela, there is no separation of church and state. I get it, Lex, the dichotomy, the irony, and how there could be so much corruption, bribes, infidelity, etc., etc. When churches are full on Sundays and everyone's got a prayer altar in the house with statues of their favorite saints and candles everywhere, by all appearances, it seems that Latinos are very, very serious about religion. That is, until you see the way they act if you've been living down here a while. Well, I once had this very same conversation with a Catholic priest missionary I got stuck sitting next to at the airport in Panama on a delayed flight layover. I thought he'd start preaching to me, drone on and on about it because he had a captive audience. Now, when you make the mistake of telling a Catholic priest you went to Catholic school yourself, suddenly it's old home week. That could be a mistake, but that time I got no lecture at all. In fact, he surprised me with his answer. He said, "I really think a lot of the double standards you're talking about, they're due to the confessional. You see, the Catholic Church allows you to commit any sin at all. Murder, theft, anything. And if you go to confession, it's all wiped out. So, if when you're walking out of the church you get run over by a car and you croak, you'll go instantly to heaven. It's a get-out-of-hell-free card. Doesn't matter if you're Mao, Stalin, Hitler, Bill Gates, George Soros, or Ovomit. If you go to confession, all your sins are wiped away." So, my new airport buddy with the funny collar said Latinos are well aware of that. It's funny, though. None of the hundreds of other organized religions have that kind of loophole. Just Catholics. And most Latin American countries are 80-plus percent Catholic. Down from around 95% Catholic just 50 short years ago. Oh, and get this. A good long-term Latin American sociology study has concluded that Latinos in general mention God in a reverent way 3 times more often in general conversation than any other culture. They say twice as many prayers and watch much less porn statistically than the average first world person. But that could be because they have less disposable income and thus can only afford slower internet speeds. Enough said about that. All right, now in a completely different U.S. immigration study, data shows that a very large percentage of Latino adult males who are in the states illegally are initially caught and deported because they're caught violating U.S. traffic laws. Now, of course, they have the same laws in their own countries, but cops almost never enforce them. In the states, as you know, you can't drive around with burnt-out lights, you can't run stop signs, pass on curves, not give way to ambulances and school buses. You can't have a cracked windshield or missing side view mirrors. You'll get pulled over. And the cops will run the barcode on your license too. In many cases, they find out for Latinos, they're fakes and not registered in the system. Or they are actually registered in the system, but obtained with a false or stolen social security number. The thing is, here in Latin America, there are tons of fake driver's licenses going around. Almost anyone could get one for between $50 and $100. And they look absolutely real, except they're not properly registered in the transit department's database. But the average Latino holding such a fake license here in Latin America doesn't worry when he gets pulled over because almost no Latin American country transit police, except I believe just Costa Rica and Colombia, can scan the barcode or run the numbers to see if it's actually registered. Oh, and here's another trick you see quite often here in Latin America. A cop will pull over a person who's a foreigner in the country, let's say a Venezuelan. There's a ton of them around. And they'll flash that Venezuelan driver's license. And maybe the cop will write him a ticket. Well, they'll never have to pay that ticket for one thing, because there's really nothing they can do to you if you don't. However, if you're a local driving on that country's driver's license and you get a ticket and have to pay a fine, it will catch up to you if you ever buy a car or a motorcycle and try to register it. But back to that hypothetical Venezuelan who got pulled over. when he or she flashes that driver's license, the cop will never, ever be able to get into the Venezuelan database to see if it's real. Same thing, for example, if you're pulled over in Panama and you're driving with a Mexican or another Latin American country driver's license. The cops will never be able to run that barcode or those numbers to find out if you exist in the Mexican or other Latin country legit driver database. So what's it got to do with anything? Well, here's the trick. And I've seen gringos and long-term expats use this as well. They'll buy a driver's license from a guy who knows a guy in an adjacent Latin country. Let's say you live in Honduras and you pop over to El Salvador and you buy one of those fake licenses from a guy who knows a guy. Well, once you pop back to Honduras where you're living, if you're driving and get pulled over and flash that El Salvador license, that will satisfy the cop. Even so, there'd be no way for him to verify it because he could never get into another country's driving or transit database. You know, that's the way it was in the States before 1970. You could have had tons of moving violations, even revoked license for drunken driving in one state, travel to another state and get pulled over. The cop would have no way of knowing your past deadbeat record. Of course, in the first world now, the States, Europe, Canada, their state, country, and territorial databases are all linked now. But in Latin America, no way. There's still huge lag time. Now, I know I mentioned this on a previous show. One of the main reasons gringos and expats are worried about having a valid driver's license is because once your home state license expires, you can't just pop back and get it renewed because they're now requiring that you prove that you live in the state with rent and utility receipts, etc. And you can't get a legit driver's license in a Latin country unless you're a permanent resident. And believe me, there are tens of thousands of gringos and expats in Latin America that are not permanent residents, and their stateside driver's licenses have expired or are on the verge of it. So they carry an expired license and do have some anxiety about it. Oh, and here's something you'll never see on blogs or on YouTube. One of my expat gringo acquaintances, who cannot get his driver's license renewed, he's from Texas and had a DUI. And here's what he did, and this is for entertainment purposes only. He made a nice color scan of his Texas driver's license. He had someone Photoshop the expiration date, changed it from 2020 to 2025. He printed out a nice color copy, went down to the local police station he was living in Panama, reported his wallet stolen with the driver's license in it. The police made out a nice robbery report, all nicely signed and stamped officially at the police department. And on that paperwork, the driver's license was described by number. And now he carries around that official document in his glove compartment, stapled to that nice Photoshopped copy of his Texas driver's license. And every time he gets pulled over, and he's gotten pulled over, I think, 3 times in the last year, he just hands the cop that official paperwork saying his license was stolen. And the cop buys it every time. How can they not? So you might wonder, how long could he safely drive with that document? Well, he did it for a year or so, and in time, that piece of paper got pretty ratty. So he did it again. He went down to a nearby town's police department, pulled the same thing, and now he's got an updated police report saying that he's had his license stolen. So I guess he could theoretically keep doing that forever. Only in Latin America, huh? By the way, he said, when you go and report a theft at the police department, they're so nice and kind to you. Especially, he said, in a country like Panama, where they've got a lot of gringos, they don't want stories like that to go viral on the internet. It could tarnish and damage the tourism biz. In fact, he said, one of the cops offered to give him a ride home. And believe it or not, the same cop told him to remember to carry around that police report, and if he ever got stopped and questioned about it, he could call him personally, and he gave the guy his cell phone number. Yep, that gringo advantage kicked in, all right. Again, I'm not recommending you do anything illegal. I'm only relating stories to you that other podcasts and blogs won't talk about. I know you do want to hear about gringo expats here in Latin America and how they hack the system, right? Speaking of hackers, here's an email from a nerdy software guy. That's how he describes himself. No names, please, he says. Dear Johnny, I'm sort of an introverted software guy who until recently worked for a big generic insurance company in New York City. Now I'm finally ready to get moving on my plan B. I'll be down to your next seminar. First, a few things about me. I have made a fortune in crypto. I didn't need your advice on crypto. I was on board before you ever mentioned it on your show. I'm writing today to warn people of the pitfalls of online dating. I'm totally sick of it. I want to meet a real live girl, preferably a Latina, face to face or even mask to mask will do. For your and your listeners' information, the regular online dating sites are full of scammers. I would know. I lost $5,000 to a lady that sucked me right in. Let's start with Craigslist. It's just loaded with escorts, photoshopped fat girls, and psychologically damaged women who will never do a live video with you. because their Photoshop artwork will be revealed, and they'll have such lame excuses not to do a video, like slow internet, which really only occurs today in North Korea. If you think politicians lie, you ought to see the girls on the dating sites. So skip Craigslist. Then there's OkCupid and various English language Cupid sites where you mostly find hipster girls and nightclub party girls with heavy credit card debt. They're usually single mothers on welfare or living with other perpetually broke friends. And those Christian dating sites, well, they're for guys who went from drugs to Jesus, often still living with their mothers. Nice girls are there for sure, but boring. And Match.com is for hooking up with professional women who have found that when closing in on 40, that their careers are not enough. They've won their battles with the alpha males in the workplace. They put having kids on hold for a career, and now their biological clocks are ticking. They're hunting for that second husband and that 1.6 kids. She'll want to dominate and wear the pants in the family, though, so beware. I repeat, Johnny, I'm sick of it. I want to meet a real live girl, preferably a Latina, face to face. Mask to mask will do. My advice, my two Satoshis for your listeners? How can some of us software guys be so smart about machines and code, and yet so dense about human motivations, interactions, and the dating game in general? Unfortunately, when us tech guys enter dating sites, we are babes in the woods. Rubes ripe for the gouging. I've been gouged, all right, Johnny, to the tune of around $5,000. I know, what an idiot. In the end, I realized us techies would be much better served playing less World of Warfare, renting a few chick flicks, making a few dermatologist appointments, and having a gay friend or relative pick out our wardrobes and decorate our condos. Have you ever seen a single software guy or single tech guy's apartment? You might have, Johnny. You're an engineer. Most of my friends, even the ones rolling into crypto dough, have a mattress on the floor, a few beanbag chairs, and sets of unmatched towels swiped from hotel tech conferences. So that's my experience with online dating sites, Johnny. I'm sick of them. Oh, and you'll find out my name at the seminar. Okay, thanks for that, Mr. Tech Guy. Oh, and just a sad closing note. My brother's wife died young, and after a year or so, he started going on those online dating sites. He met a lot of girls and helped out a few with $100 here and there. MoneyGram and Western Union, of course. After a while, he fell pretty hard for a Filipina girl. He sent her money for things she said she needed, like the rent, utilities, phone, etc. In the end, he dropped around $5,000 too. Then after a few months, he paid for her to come to Chicago. And when he went to pick her up at the airport, she never showed up. How big a blow would that be to your ego? How big an idiot would you feel darting around the airport for a couple hours, realizing she never even bought a ticket to get on that plane?
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.